Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This morning, President Donald Trump tweeted this, quote, "Any negative polls are fake news, just like the CNN, ABC, NBC polls in the election. Sorry, people want border security and extreme vetting," end quote. So let's just think about that for a moment. The president of the United States declared that he does not accept any negative polls as a reality, that the only polls he believes, and by extension, the only polls he thinks you should believe, are the ones that put him in a positive light. Well, that's one example of why Jason Stanley thinks the United States has entered into a new era of political propaganda. Stanley is a professor of philosophy at Yale University. He's also author of How Propaganda Works, and he joins us today from WNPR in New Haven. Professor Stanley, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much.
So, a new era of political propaganda, how does what Donald Trump talks about, or how he talks about it, differ from what we've seen for several hundred years?
Well, there are continuities. I mean, the goal of all party propaganda is to make your allegiance to a political party like your allegiance to the Patriots, where, you know, you don't really think, you just follow. But the Democrats and the Republicans have long done that. There are people who will vote for the Republicans or the Democrats no matter what. But typically, allegiance is to the ideals these parties represent. And at our best, our politics is an open dialogue between about the conflict, if such there be, between liberty and equality, our two great democratic values. But it really looks like when Trump talks about the movement, mm-hmm. what he's talking about is allegiance to him, allegiance to Trump.
Well, so let me ask you just in more detail then. You've written about how you believe your analysis is that the manner of propaganda that Donald Trump uses is along the lines of authoritarian propaganda. So how would you define that?
So it's classically authoritarian propaganda dating back to Plato's Republic in Book 8 when, for example, the previous guest said that the order, the travel ban was not a product of deliberation. I believe it was a product of deliberation. As Plato says in Book 8, it's necessary for a tyrant to always be stirring up war. And Plato also says the first thing an authoritarian does is to stir up a war. So I think the ban is meant to sort of be provocative and to like constantly keep people in fear so that he can represent himself as he said in his RNC speech, as the only solution.
So tell me more, though. I mean, if we were to have a sort of a mini bullet list of the things that are the hallmarks of authoritarian propaganda, you named one of them that is sort of the inviting or stirring up of chaos. What are the other hallmarks?
Dividing us. So the president seems to speak mainly to his supporters and triple down, if anything, upon drawing their support rather than unifying. So the second thing would be simply inventing things whole cloth. That's one thing the media really missed out on. I mean, it's popular to show that you have dominance over the truth. That's what an authoritarian does. So the media kept on waiting for him to be punished for that. But his supporters are attracted by that. The supporters are attracted by his open defiance of reality. I mean, Hannah Arendt says in Origins of Totalitarianism, in describing totalitarian propaganda, the mob really believed that truth was whatever respectable society had passed over with corruption. The modern masses do not believe in anything visible or the reality of our own experiences, What convinces masses are not facts and not even invented facts, but only the consistency of the system of which they are presumably part. And she adds, the problem with authoritarian, the main problem with authoritarian propaganda is its open defiance of common sense.
Right. So let me just play a clip here. It's one that's probably familiar to people by now. This is just from a couple of weeks ago when senior administration advisor Kellyanne Conway was pressed by NBC's Chuck Todd about claims that the administration was making about the size of the crowd at President Trump's inauguration and comments that were also later made by Press Secretary Sean Spicer. So here's Chuck Todd tangling with Kellyanne Conway.
Why the president asked the White House press secretary to come out in front of the podium for the first time and utter a falsehood. Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Alternative facts?
So, Jason Stanley, I mean, is that exchange making exactly the point that you were making, that what Kellyanne Conway said is exactly what the president's most fervent supporters want to hear, a defiance of those who purport to know reality?
Let me repeat Arendt's words again. What convinces masses are not facts and not even invented facts. But rather open defiance. The movement is the leader speaks, and you're a follower if you repeat what the leader says, and that's attractive.
Yeah,
that's
so
attractive.
I think. I mean, so there's this underlying assumption that this hasn't happened or doesn't happen often in American political discourse. But I wonder about that because, you know, it was the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, who famously gave the world that phrase, we're not a reality-based administration.
Absolutely. It started then. And we saw when they sent Colin Powell out to repeat what were lies, that sort of made Colin Powell complicit. You saw General Powell is a very noble man, and it was a very sad moment in our history to see that happen, to see him being sort of forced to be part of this big lie. But yes, as Karl Rove said, you know, we're an empire now. We create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that definitely, the Iraq War, that's why the president is always returning to the Iraq War, right? He's always saying, look, you know, we're not exactly innocent ourselves. Every time he's accused of bending reality, he returns to the Iraq War and says, well, the elites did it too, you know.
Well, so let me just jump in here because you mentioned Colin Powell. We have actually a little bit of tape from General Powell, I guess then Secretary of State Powell's United Nations speech in February of 2003, where he made the case for war to the UN Security Council. And there was a moment where he held up a white vial to the cameras. And he basically made this claim about the chemical warfare capacity that the United States believed Iraq was capable of.
Less than a teaspoonful of dry anthrax in an envelope shut down the United States Senate in the fall of 2001. Iraq declared 8,500 liters of anthrax, but UNSCOM estimates that Saddam Hussein could have produced 25,000 liters. If concentrated into this dry form, this amount would be enough to fill tens upon tens upon tens of thousands of teaspoons.
That's former Secretary of State Colin Powell in 2003. Jason Stanley, I wonder if we could just step back in history a little bit here, because I'm curious. I read that your grandmother, I believe, lived in pre-World War II Germany and
yes,
wrote a memoir about her time there. And there's some lessons to be drawn from her experience. Tell us about that.
Well, the lessons to be drawn, there are many lessons. I believe that there was the kind of creation of an artificial enemy. In that case, it was the Jewish people, my people. In this case, I fear it's American citizens of Islamic faith. And there were years of provocation. My father was growing up in Berlin as a small child, learning to read the signs. And when he was learning to read, he reported to me that he would read these horrible things, and they were about him. And it took him a while to recognize that he was the enemy, and that at a certain point, Jewish children were excluded from parks, And there was a constant provocation. And the constant provocation led to a terrorist incident, a German Jewish citizen murder assassinating Ernst von Rath, a German diplomat. And Joseph Goebbels said, the righteous indignation of the German people must be freed. And that was Kristallnacht. And what is happening, I'm concerned. I hope it's not happening. But the Trump administration will have to prove me wrong. I think we have to prepare for the worst. But if, you know, the constant provoking seems to be leading up to a moment of where there would be someone who would behave horrifically and do a terrorist attack, of which there have been many by right-wing extremists, but we're being prepared for someone responding to these provocations violently and then a violent crackdown on our fellow citizens of Islamic faith. That's what concerns me.
Is it really as tenuous as that? Or is it, should we look back to other American presidencies and take heart in the fact that the Republic survives regardless of who's in the White House?
I believe in the American people, and I believe that, you know, we will not let our fellow American citizens of Muslim faith down if we are asked to react against them, and I hope we aren't. But I just think that we have to learn from history, and maybe the administration is just out of control and things are just chaotic and not intentionally chaotic. But there's a constant provocation. I mean, Michael Flynn declares Islam the enemy. I mean, put yourself, my family was the enemy. They grew up as children knowing what it is to be the enemy. There are children hearing this. There are children of Muslim faith hearing this. Every American has to put themselves in the mind of a 7-year-old Muslim child and think what it is to hear about the rhetoric that's directed against them.
Well, Jason Stanley, let me ask you, we've just got a minute and a half or so to go. All of what you said makes me wonder if really where we should be focusing our attention is on ourselves, the American people, because propaganda, authoritarian or not, only works with the complicity of the people listening to it. And what I'm hearing you say is that people want to hear what the president is saying and how he's saying it, so that instead of looking to him to change, we ought to be looking at each other.
We ought to be looking at each other. I couldn't have said it more directly or more perfectly myself.
And so if that's the case, then how?
We reach out to our fellow citizens who supported him, who didn't believe what he said, who said, it's always the case that when authoritarians speak, they're always speaking literally. But many of my friends who supported Trump, or people I know who supported Trump, thought he wasn't speaking seriously. They said, oh, he's just using the stuff about Islam for politics. Well, that's rarely the case. Authoritarians are always pride themselves on action. So we must reach out to our friends who supported Trump and say, just promise me that you won't overreact if and when something tragic like a terrorist attack happens on our soil.
Well, Jason Stanley is a professor of philosophy at Yale University. He's author of the book, How Propaganda Works. Jason Stanley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today. You know, you can always leave us your thoughts and comments either at our website, radioboston.org, or on Twitter. We're at Radio Boston. Also, we've got a Facebook page as well. That's facebook.com/Radio Boston. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.